Well, we could spend hours talking about the mainstream media. In fact, I'm increasingly impressed with people under the age of 50 because more and more of them don't bother listening to the mainstream media anymore. They go on the internet and they find other sources of information because they've figured out that they're being lied to. And the American people have been systematically misinformed about events in Eastern Europe now for many, many years. You know, I continue to hear one spokesman after the next, one talking head after the next on any of the news media, Fox, NBC, NBC, MSNBC, CNN, whatever. They all start out about all the unprovoked attack by Putin on the peaceful, loving people of Ukraine. Well, that's a lot of nonsense. We've been working for years building up this enormous 600,000 man standing army with one purpose in mind, to attack Russia and turn eastern Ukraine into a platform for attacks on everything in Russia, including the use of theater ballistic missiles. The Russians finally felt compelled to intervene, and they have. Now we're talking about nuclear weapons. The Russians have not talked about nuclear weapons. The Russians have responded to statements coming out of Washington and elsewhere in NATO that if a tactical nuclear weapon is used, that they're prepared to respond to it. Just a few weeks ago, for the umpteenth time, Zelensky has talked about the use of nuclear weapons. Long before the war began, Zelensky was arguing for a nuclear weapon from the United States. The Russians are horrified by Zelensky and his aspirations to become a nuclear state with the goal of destroying Russia. So the Russians have simply responded and said, look, we regard nuclear weapons as retaliatory weapons only. We are not going to use them unless we are attacked. And if we are attacked, we will respond in kind with nuclear weapons. Otherwise, we will not use them, and the Russians don't need them. One of the things that people don't seem to understand is that the nuclear weapon was initially attractive in the 50s and the 60s because we had no precision with regard to the striking power of our missiles or artillery or anything else. Everything was a dumb munition. You pointed it in a particular direction, and you struck the target if you were lucky. Nuclear weapons provided some measure of assurance that even though your weapon may land a mile or two away from where you wanted it to go, that you would destroy everything. Well, those days are over. The Russians demonstrated quite recently with the strikes on Ukraine that they can do everything we can do with their missiles, rockets, and artillery. They have precision. They don't need any nuclear weapons. And the Russians have never used the substantial military power at their disposal against Ukraine for the very simple reason that the Russians regarded Ukrainians as a Slavic brothers with the same Orthodox Christian faith. And they wanted to avoid the kind of slaughter and bloodletting that the Ukrainians have insisted upon, or frankly, I would argue that we have insisted upon. So the bottom line is no. Unless we use a nuclear weapon, there will be no nuclear weapon exchange whatsoever on the ground in eastern Ukraine or anywhere else in Europe.
Now, how did you come to this perspective that you share where you're not, you obviously stand out in a sea of commentary in Western media, right? I mean, in your perspective, did you come here to this position in terms of talking about foreign policy realism through many decades of thinking about this? Was there a moment in your career that you kind of had a change of heart? I don't know what your original views were on this matter as someone in the military.
I don't have any changes of heart, David. Russia is not the Soviet Union. They are not communists. The Soviet Union is gone. It went away. We are dealing with Orthodox Christian Russia that, if anything, has more in common with Tsarist Russia today, the Russia that disappeared in 1917 and 1918, thanks to Bolshevism, than it does with the former Soviet Union. My background, frankly, is in Soviet and German policy towards one another, what you would call Soviet-German relations or Russian-German relations. I wrote my doctoral work on it. I published books and talked about it at length. I've been doing this for the last 40 years, nearly. I was schooled in Germany, spent 10 years of my life living in Europe, 8 of those in Germany. And one of those years was spent as an exchange student in 69 and 70. My first visit there was in 1968. Now, the point I'm trying to make is that all you have to do is study the facts. No one is doing that. The mainstream media simply picks up whatever is provided that is ultimately concocted by the U.S. and U.K. intelligence communities. This is an information campaign. This is a psychological operation designed to persuade everybody that something is true that is not. It's very simple. We went through this initially before we went into Vietnam. You know, everyone was told that we were attacked in the Bay of Pigs, or excuse me, not the Bay of Pigs, in the Tonkin Gulf. And, of course, that was a lie. There was no attack against us in the Tonkin Gulf. And then every effort that could be made with the help of the media and by the government to bring us online to attack in Vietnam was done. We struggled with that for 10 years. And it took years for the American people to discover that the entire thing was a scam. It was a lie. We were involving ourselves in a civil war. It was not what we thought it was. We've been down this road before. And, of course, in 2003, when we went into Iraq, first thing we did was to make sure everybody understood that Saddam Hussein was another version of Stalin or Hitler. And whatever Saddam Hussein was, that was not one of the things he was. And that we were on some grand liberation to transform Muslim Arabs into Anglo-Saxons. It was all nonsense. And we've been treated to this repeatedly over the years, again and again and again. Now we're faced with Russia, which is not Iraq. Russia is a major military power. The Russians have exercised extraordinary restraint in the way they behaved to this point. That's now going to end. It has to end. They have to bring this war to an end with the complete destruction of the Ukrainian threat, which is really our threat, because we've enabled it, we've equipped it, and we are directing it. We are lucky that we are not yet in a full-blown war with Russia. And we had better sober up and get clear in our minds what it is that we do and do not want. And I do not think Americans as a population are interested in going to war in eastern Ukraine. Certainly not against Russia for this dubious regime in Ukraine, one of the most corrupt countries in the world. So it's time for Americans to think, to ask hard questions. There are never any hard questions. Biden has never asked any hard questions. No one asks hard questions. No one knows why we're doing what we're doing in eastern Ukraine other than we want to harm and destroy Russia, which is lunacy. Now, we can go into the real reasons that no one will talk about, but the point is no one asks the hard questions, David. They need to be asked, what do we want this to look like when it's over? Do we want Ukraine and Russia in complete ruins? Is this the first step to the destruction of everyone who disagrees with us, who doesn't sign on for our views in the world, who won't allow themselves to be bullied by us financially? What is the goal here? No one asks those hard questions, and so we're treated to pablum, crap that makes no sense.
And what are the real reasons why we're over there? I mean, is this...
Well, I went over these with you last time,
right?
And I tried to explain that we're talking about a global financial system that is cracking. That system was built by us in the aftermath of World War II. This system, which is based on the mighty dollar, thanks to the changes we made in abandoning the gold standard and creating what we call the petrodollar, is cracking. It's crumbling. The world is now aware that if they are going to operate as independent agents, if they are going to be allowed to live and think and work as they wish as independent countries, whether it's China, it's India, it's Russia, it doesn't matter, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, any of these countries, take your pick, Brazil, Argentina, they're going to have to de-dollarize. We are trying to make it impossible for people to do that. And we are trying to use military power to threaten and weaken those states that refuse to cooperate with us. That agenda is bound up with the agenda that is killing us here at home. The climate change nonsense. The attack on Americans who are white and on Western Christian culture and civilization. These things are all bound up together.
Yeah.
And we are suffering here at home with open borders, the influx of millions of people that we simply cannot assimilate, cannot absorb, cannot maintain, and cannot afford as we move into a deep recession that stands an excellent chance of becoming a depression.
I know the former Congressman Ron Paul used to say that, you know, we had a gold standard and then we got off of it. We basically switched to a military supremacy standard for our currency, apparently, right? They have to be everywhere.
Well, I think Ron Paul was right. And Ron, everything that Ron Paul said was true. And we're still dealing with the consequences of this business. And everyone in Washington is busy getting rich, stuffing their pockets full of cash. You get elected, you go to Washington to become rich. And there are lots of people willing to buy you, to pay for you, so that you will walk into the House and the Senate and vote for the things that they want. Right. How many of the so-called Republicans have stood up and said, why are we giving Ukraine the equivalent of the entire Russian defense budget in 7 months? Why are we doing that? If the Ukrainians are so good, why have they lost all the equipment and why do we have to replace it? If Ukraine is winning, then why are we still involved in this? Because they've been winning now for the last 7 months, according to the mainstream media. Mm-hmm. And why do they need help from the outside? Well, they need help because they've had 100,000 men killed, another 200,000 or 300,000 wounded at least. This war is going to end on Russian terms when the Russians decide to end it. And I think we're staring at that in November and December. And it's a tragedy because none of this was necessary. It could have all been avoided had we stepped up early on and said, let's have a negotiated settlement, peace talks. Something could have been worked out. This could have been avoided, but it hasn't been. And in the meantime, Europe, look at Europe.
Right. Yeah. I saw that the Greta girl has pronounced that Germany will be permitted to allow for nuclear power plants to continue for this winter.
Yeah, I mean, that's laughable. I mean, Greta, I don't even want to waste time on that fool, but the Germans were very stupid. You don't opt for the new green economy until it works, until you've got something that gives you a return on your investment, and it doesn't work. It's a failure. It's a miserable failure. And they did that. They shut down their nuclear power plants and shut down many of their coal-fired plants, all in favor of natural gas from Russia, which made sense. It's cheap. It's abundant. And it's readily available, but they never considered the possibility that if they join this hostile alliance that wants to destroy Russia, that the Russians might decide not to ship natural gas anymore. Right. In which case, they're in serious trouble, and they're not the Lone Rangers in Europe.
Yeah, I know it's a dubious source, but I saw on Wikipedia that said that you were the top planner for General Wesley Clark as the commander of NATO for the 1999 attack on Serbia. Is that correct? And is there anything you learned from that experience that you could share?
Well, I was the director of strategic planning in the months that led up to the air assault. And when the air assault began, I was the director of the Joint Operations Center. So I was involved in all of the plans that were considered at the strategic level, all the discussions that went on between him and Brussels. And to be frank with you, I did not think that we needed to bomb anyone on behalf of Kosovo. And I thought that there were alternatives that were readily available that could have avoided that war. But that decision was not in my hands, and the decision was made in Washington. When the decision was made in Washington, I obeyed orders and did what I was told to do. And that's what you do. If you think soldiers in the field can take a vote on what they will or won't do when someone decides to go to war, well, then you're very much mistaken. That's why it's always a mistake to criticize soldiers. Now, you can criticize the senior officers, the four stars, because they always have an opportunity to say, I'm sorry, I can't in good conscience execute these orders. And they can have a profound impact. If a four star stands up and says, I will not go any further with this, this is wrong, everyone in the United States pays attention because it's a four-star general. If you're a full colonel or a lieutenant colonel or a major and you step forward, they say, well, it's too bad. You know, who's he and who cares?
Right.
And so how many times have we had four-star generals since Douglas MacArthur stand up and object to anything? I can answer that for you. Never.
Right.
Which tells you something about the acute lack of character in the senior ranks of the armed forces. That's another important topic.
you know, former CIA officer Larry Johnson, he's coming on the program tomorrow, but he had a piece out on his website talking about how there's no single war in Ukraine and NATO is in trouble. And he talks about a nightmare scenario that could happen where Ukraine and NATO, where Russia invokes the Collective Security Treaty Organization and perhaps makes an invasion into the northern border of Ukraine. Do you think that is a possibility here going into the winter?
Well, it's one that should not be excluded. Larry Johnson is a very capable man and a very smart intelligence officer. And that's a nightmare scenario indeed. There are all sorts of things that are possible because the Russians have finally concluded that we have become their sworn enemies, that we are determined to destroy them. Russia is not revolting or rebelling against Putin. If anything, the Russians are disappointed that he hasn't been harder and more decisive earlier. That's what I'm reading in all of the material that comes out of Russia. That's what I'm hearing from people coming out of the country, that they are 100% behind Putin and his war in Ukraine. They understand the stakes. They understand the attempts to destroy them. And so now I think they are ready to fully mobilize. Right now they've only mobilized 300,000 reservists, which I suspect will be more than enough for what is coming. But I think it's important for Americans to understand that there's no faltering will in Russia. There's no rebellion brewing. But there are a lot of people in Ukraine who are tired of being pushed at gunpoint into Russian gunfire. And that's what's happening inside Ukraine. It's become a almost a Stalinist dictatorship with a secret police force that is threatening the lives of everyone and anyone anywhere who will not ultimately support everything they want to do. That's one of the reasons that the Russians targeted the secret police headquarters in Kyiv in the last salvo of missiles that was launched a few days ago.
Speaking of that, I want to go to some listener questions. Sura asks about whether the new Russian commander, Sorovikin, whether his appointment has anything to do with the targeting of the Ukrainian infrastructure that we've seen.
No, I doubt that. But I think what has happened is that a new commander was appointed with a new set of tasks. He's been told essentially to bring this war to a close. I think that's quite clear. And that means annihilate what remains of the Ukrainian threat. He now has freedom of action that his predecessors did not have. And he now has vast forces at his disposal that his predecessors did not have. Remember, no more than 20% of the Russian army was ever present in Ukraine at any given point in time. Now, that's a minuscule number of Russian troops, and they were largely replaced by allied forces and volunteer forces. Only the artillery and the air power remained that was part of the regular armed forces of Russia. So the answer to the question is, there's a real change, yes, in what's about to happen. But it's not necessarily because of him. This is where he's being picked to go in and get the job done, because obviously the president has confidence in him. And he's going to have everything he needs to do the job. I think that's pretty clear.
The listener Michael asks what if you have any thoughts on Petraeus's recent comments about the potential response that America could have. He says, just to give you a hypothetical, in the event of a nuclear attack by Russia, we would respond by leading a NATO effort that would take out every Russian conventional force that we can see and identify on the battlefield in Ukraine and also in Crimea and every ship in the Black Sea. That's what he said on ABC News on Sunday.
Yeah. Well, first of all, there will be no Russian attack with nuclear weapons. That's off the table. We're the ones that keep talking about nuclear weapons, not the Russians. And secondly, he's pretending as though this thing called NATO is a viable alliance, that there are millions of Norwegians and Swedes and Danes and Belgians. Well, the Swedes aren't really in NATO yet. Belgians, Dutch, French, Germans, Italians, Spaniards, Portuguese, Greeks, Bulgarians, Romanians, everyone is ready to mobilize and march east. Anyone who has spent any time in Europe and knows anything about the people that live there knows that's a lot of nonsense. No one in Europe wants to fight Russia, and the European populations are appalled. There are demonstrations on right now in Europe involving 10,000 to 100,000 people in the Czech Republic, in Germany, in France, in Italy, in Austria, These places are filled with people who are angry, who oppose this war, who oppose our policies, who oppose our exploitation of Europe in this war with Russia. It's only a matter of time until the current governments fall, and when they fall, they're going to be replaced by people who are not going to go along with us.
We're almost out of time, but Jeff asks, will Henry Kissinger be brought in when there is, quote, frost on the pumpkin to negotiate some sort of peace deal? That's what George Webb is predicting.
Well, I don't think Henry Kissinger at this point is the man for the job. I think he's a bit old at this point. But remember, Kissinger, whether you like him or not, I'm not a great fan, but Kissinger spoke the truth when he pointed out that we had precipitated this conflict because of our failure to listen to Russia and treat its interests as legitimate. He was right. It's time for a new government in Washington as well, in my judgment, but our system doesn't allow for that at this point in time.